It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we'll discuss how poor and working class people are portrayed on TV.
First, we're taking a look at some of the primary elections happening next week in Wisconsin. The three-way race in the Democratic primary for Attorney General pits two county district attorneys against a veteran legislator from Milwaukee. As the election nears, all three are doing their best to convince voters that they have what it takes to be the state's top attorney. Gilman Halstead reports.
At a debate this week at the UW-Madison Law School, the candidates faced a barrage of questions from law students who wanted to know their views on defending the state's voter ID law and gay marriage ban, and how each of them as Democrats would be able to work with a Republican governor if Scott Walker is reelected. The only woman in the race, Jefferson County DA Susan Happ, says she'd rather work with Walker's Democratic challenger, Mary Burke, but she says she's had lots of experience working with people she disagrees with. She's the first Democratic DA elected in Republican Jefferson County since the 1930s.
I'm a Democrat in Republican County. All of my constitutional officers in my courthouse are Republicans. Public safety is not a partisan issue. I've worked together with my Republican sheriff to save my taxpayers over $250,000. And so we know that we can no longer refuse to sit down at the table with people because we may have different ideological views.
Happ says that part of her record makes her more likely than her opponents to win in November if she wins the primary next week. She's an outspoken defender of women's reproductive rights and gay marriage. And like her two opponents, she says she would not defend the state's gay marriage ban or the voter ID law, both of which have been struck down in federal district court and are now before the federal appeals court. But Dane County DA Ishmael Ozan says he's the better choice. He says he's the only candidate who's helped lead a statewide agency. He served 2 years as Assistant Secretary of the Department of Corrections under Governor Jim Doyle. He says he'll defend laws that are constitutional, but he'll use the AG's office to speak out against ones he disagrees with, like sending inmates out of state to relieve overcrowding.
It is not the appropriate policy to strengthen our communities and our families. That said, if I was Attorney General, I would have to defend that law because the state has an ability to contract for those services. Now, as Attorney General, I could also talk about what truly makes our community safe and why that isn't a good policy.
The candidate in the race who's raised the most money is also the one with the least experience as a prosecutor. But Milwaukee State Representative John Richards says he's spent 15 years in the legislature passing laws that protect both public safety and civil rights.
I'm the one with the longest track record of working on the variety of issues that are before the Attorney General's office today, on consumer rights, on standing up for women's right to choose, on voting rights, on marriage equality, on making sure that we protect our environment. Those are all things that I've been working on as a public official. I think that's what we need, and I think that's how we win.
Richard's dominance in raising money and his base in solidly Democratic Milwaukee may give him an edge. He's run a more energetic statewide campaign than the other two, but Happ is running a close second in the money race and is working hard to win the women's vote. Ozan has raised the least money, but he's touting his prominent role in challenging Act 10 that stripped public employees of their collective bargaining rights in 2011. He's hoping that will gain him votes from those who were active in the recall elections sparked by the court ruling upholding that law. The winner of next Tuesday's election will face Republican Brad Schimmel, the Waukesha DA, who already has a larger campaign war chest than any of the three Democrats. Gilman Halstead, Wisconsin Public Radio.
All week on the Joy Cardine Show and on Central Time, you can hear candidate forums for the primary elections next week. For all you need to know for Election Day and to hear all of our candidate interviews, visit wisconsinvote.org.
Now a look at the ways poor and working class people are represented on television. With shows like Two Broke Girls, The Middle, and Raising Hope on television now, it would look like producers are trying to give audiences a reflection of poor and working class life.
Some in the industry believe that when people are losing their jobs, they want to see TV shows about people struggling with money or about losing their jobs. But our next guest says that's all wrong.
Robert Thompson joins us now. He's professor of television and popular culture at Syracuse University. He's really Mr. Popular Culture in some ways. Robert, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So the idea that people want to see themselves reflected on television, poor working class people, you say it's wrong. Why?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily wrong. I think people want to see amusing things on television and compelling things. And this idea that, people have that, oh, when the economy goes bad, people want to see the economy going bad on TV. When the economy went bad during the Depression, we saw some of the most incredible, conspicuous consumption in Hollywood movies. Those Busby Berkeley dances, We're in the Money, where women are dressed up as actual money. We look at some of the worst economic times, and pop culture has often shown the fantasy of those times not being bad. At the same time, during the Depression, we had a lot of movies that were about people that were suffering, The Grapes of Wrath, for example. So generally, I think the idea that if you get your pink slip on Monday and you go home and you don't have a job anymore, I think a rule of thumb is that you don't necessarily want to then watch that same thing as part of your entertainment regimen. I know that when my mother was dying of cancer, the last thing in the world I wanted to do was watch a cancer-themed movie on television. So it's not like people don't want to watch. They simply want to watch good, interesting things, and I think it has very little to do with what's actually happening in the real economy.
So given all of that, how do you think that TV shows, writers try to sort of tap into the zeitgeist of the times?
Well, I think as far as showing poor people and even working class people, I think television has generally been pretty poor at that. We can look at a couple of classics that I think did it well. The Honeymooners. I'm not sure whether I'd call them poor, but they were certainly struggling. The Waltons, which was an enormous hit in the 1970s, was about a Depression-era family in the South who pretty much subsisted on what they could grow and, saw and that kind of thing. Roseanne as a working-class family. But even some of the shows on today, presumably Two Broke Girls is about people that are poor. It's in the title. They're broke. But at the same time, the lifestyle they live is really, in many ways, not reflective of what it would really be like to be broke.
Let's dig deeper in some of the examples you gave, and let's start with The Honeymooners and give a listen to the program.
What am I going to do, Norton? I've only had some money. There's still time to get us something. It's early yet. Hey, have you got any money?
Don't look at me. This is Christmas time. Everybody's busted at this time. I'm broke. I ain't got no money.
So as you mentioned, Robert Thompson, maybe more working class than poor, but the theme comes up again and again of they have to struggle to make ends meet. There's not money for the fancy Christmas present. And it's in a comedy. Do comedies do a good job of juggling that, reality of dealing with money and still being funny?
Right. Well, yeah, I think that's a good point in that a comedy can do it without it being so depressing. I mean, I think that's been one of the kisses of death for television is you don't want something to be so depressing that people don't want to watch it. That, by the way, may be changing with some of these fancy cable shows and everything. But The Honeymooners was unique in that it really was kind of relentless. If you remember the set on that show, I mean, oftentimes people that are struggling, like in Two Broke Girls, live in these Manhattan apartments that are way beyond what presumably the money they have would ever be able to afford. The Honeymooners apartment, it had like a table and an ice box and not even a refrigerator, an ice box. And that was about it. I mean, that really was a show that showed people operating in a life that really looked like it was paycheck to paycheck. We saw that again in Roseanne in the 1980s and 90s, but there was not a whole lot of shows like that in between.
Do you have an example? You mentioned sometimes there are certain shows that wind up having sort of that kiss of death when they're trying to deal with this topic. Do you have a good example of one of those shows?
Well, I think there's been a number of programs that were about working class people that they tried in the 1970s, and they went a single season, and they've long been forgotten. There's an interesting show, Good Times, and some people mm-hmm. would remember this in the 70s. It was from the Norman Lear, the guy who brought us Maude and Sanford and Son and All in the Family. And this was a show that took place in a Chicago housing development. It was based on Cabrini Green, which was a really grim project in Chicago. To call a show like that Good Times was awfully wishful thinking. But there was a show that in the beginning tried to really give some of the texture of what it was like to be not just working class, but to be poor. And that show operated that way for a little while, and then it started changing. It's like it wasn't doing well enough showing that, so then we get the Jimmy Walker character who just jumps in the room every 10 minutes and says, "Dynamite," and everybody starts laughing hysterically. And by the time that show had been on for a couple of seasons, it had totally betrayed its original intention, and it become really just kind of a clownish burlesque that many people thought had kind of stumbled into abject racism.
We're talking about how poor and working class people are represented on TV. We've got Robert Thompson with us from Syracuse University.
And we're taking your calls on this, too. What's your favorite television show that you can remember that really works for you in terms of dealing with poor working class people? What do you think is the most accurate portrayal of poor or working class people on TV? And what would you like to see done differently in shows that focus on poor or working class people? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email at talk@WPR.org. We're picking up our discussion with Robert Thompson of Syracuse University on the representations of poor and working class people on TV.
And we're taking your calls now. What's your favorite television show that gets it right on these issues, or maybe one that you thought really got it wrong? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@WPR.org. Robert Thompson had mentioned Roseanne a moment ago. Let's give a listen to Roseanne talking about how she can get some extra money for her family.
Well, do you want extra money? Because, you know, I have my own system for extra money.
All right.
Okay. First we send in the phone bill and we forget to sign the check.
There you go.
Then we send the water bill to the electric company, electric bill to the water company.
Now you're cooking.
And you know that charge card bill, it never even showed up.
Yeah, I don't think that works anymore. We've got Anne in Viroqua, I think, talking about Roseanne as well. Anne, hi.
Hi. I really liked Roseanne, at least initially. It was really funny. And at the time that it was out, I was living in London, and, you know, we got everything like a year later. But, I mean, it was well-received there, and I was reading a review of it in a magazine, Time Out, and the comment was, well, America has finally revealed a secret that it does have a working class, because all of the sitcoms had always been about upper-middle-class people. And in England, it's like middle class, working class, and people kind of know where they're at.
Interesting. And Robert Thompson, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that is very true. If you look at the offerings from England throughout television history, they have many, many more of these kinds of programs, including a lot of the few shows that we've had over here. Sanford and Son was based on an English program. All in the Family, based on an English program. So oftentimes, in the rare case that we do a program about the working class, we often borrow it from the English. I love that clip of Roseanne, though, in that really was a show that that got to sort of the details of operating almost on the edge. I hate to admit this, but I remember seeing that episode, and not that long before I'd seen it, I had pulled that same trick. I was in graduate school. I didn't have enough to pay the electric bill, and I tried that idea of not signing the check. That is one of the ways these people actually live. And that show nailed it. But you know what's interesting? It couldn't maintain it. The final episode of, or the final season of Roseanne, they win the lottery and they become millionaires. And when you think, in even in other media, great poor people, what happens to Little Orphan Annie? She gets adopted by a millionaire. What happens to Oliver Twist?
Yeah.
He gets adopted by millionaires. Different Strokes, Webster. It's amazing how frequently, when we do find poor people in popular culture, how frequently they manage to get adopted by millionaires.
I had the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, too. I never thought of that.
Very good.
So one of the
your television.
One of the other trends we've been seeing a lot of lately is a reality TV, and I was thinking of Honey Boo Boo while we were talking about this, because there is a, you know, quote unquote realistic portrayal of a working class family sort of struggling to make ends meet and have their daughter become a star.
Yeah, and of course they once it kicked in, they're not working class anymore. They're famous celebrities, but people have given that show a lot of trash talk. I mean, they say how these people don't seem human and the rest of it. I have to say, I seem to be watching a different Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. I mean, clearly, they're not exhibiting the most exquisite taste. This is not Martha Stewart that we're watching. But I frankly find that family sometimes really, really charming. I think if I had to get stuck spending a weekend with that family or the family of one of my colleagues at the university, I'd spend it with Honey Boo Boo and her family.
Well, another reality-type genre that comes up is the TV talk show, things like Jerry Springer and Maury Povich. We've got a clip of a Maury Povich show. Oh, do we? No? Well, anyway, can you talk about that?
I can act out the clip.
Sure.
Somebody is getting a paternity test, and we're about to find out whether he's the father or not. That's every clip from the Maury Povich show.
I think that's what we had, yeah.
Probably. Well, but it's interesting. I mean, Maury Povich has made the argument. Matter of fact, I had a conversation with Maury himself once, and he very articulately made an argument that I think is worth paying attention to. And he said, you know, you get all these other shows on TV that give voice to all these people, and you see experts on CNN and this and that. And he said shows like the Maury Povich show or Jerry Springer are some of the only places where a certain class of people, which makes up a big portion of our population, have any voice whatsoever. And unlike Honey Boo Boo, they come on, we hear them, and they leave. Honey Boo Boo becomes, you know, a celebrity. And I have seen episodes of, not so much Maury Povich anymore because it's all paternity tests, but certainly of Jerry Springer, where you really do get a sense of hearing people of a certain class, and our looking down on those people is, I think, a classist attitude, and I think we exhibit it all the time. People that complained about the Jerry Springer show were, in some coded way, I think, complaining about people of a certain class.
So as we look at sort of the arc of the way that television, popular culture views poor or working class people, have you seen a change in the way that the image is reflected, more accurate, less accurate, or just the same as it's always been?
Well, there's more of everything because we used to have three networks. Now we've got all these cable channels and Netflix and all the rest of it. So I would say we've got more inaccurate, but we've also got more accurate. The Wire, for example, showed poor neighborhoods with a level of detail that we had never seen before, right down to community meetings and that kind of thing. So if you're willing to look, you can now find portrayals of the poor and the working class better than ever. You ever could have before. At the same time, you can also find stuff that's just as bad as it ever was.
Does the way we see poor and working class people as shown on TV affect the way we think of them in our society, how society views them?
Well, usually, if you don't know anybody like the people you're watching on TV, you tend to then think that's the way those people are. In this country, however, there is a growing number of poor people. So it's getting to the point where I think more and more people know real people to compare them to. But the rule of thumb is if most of what I know about people in the mafia, I know from The Sopranos and from mafia movies, because I don't know any personally. And I think that's the case with any type of person. If you've never met anybody like that, then TV takes a lot of responsibility as to what you know about them.
And do you see that any predictions about what the future looks like, or are we just going to keep seeing more of the same?
Well, it'll depend. I think dramas, of course, like The Wire, are going to deal with these types of topics. I think in the end, comedies try to get people to, you know, they're escapist, whatever that means. And in the end, I think they're never going to really get into the down and dirty of being poor, because anybody who's been poor knows that it's not that funny.
Well, Robert, we are out of time, but thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
We've been talking with Robert Thompson, a professor of television and popular culture at Syracuse University.